Good afternoon. So my presentation is entitled Creating a Program to Promote Adolescent and Provider Communication, Keeping It Real in More Ways Than One. And I'd like to acknowledge my co-author on today's presentation, Dr. Lawrence D'Angelo from Children's National, for support of the project, and also disclose that this program was funded by a grant from the National Institutes for Reproductive Health. Now, there are a couple of key concepts that are kind of used to frame today's discussion and also serve as the learning objectives that I'm hoping that you walk away with after today's brief presentation. The first centers around reported barriers and really understanding what precludes effective communication between adolescent patients and the providers that care for them in traditional primary care settings. Secondly, on what is confidentiality? What is privacy? And what are the differences between the two, especially when it comes to best practices that healthcare providers can use to ensure that both of these are maintained throughout the adolescent clinical interview? And last but not least, of course, certainly critical, is effective and non-judgmental communication. Now, while this may come as very easy for some providers, it's not as easy for all providers to provide this type of communication when working with adolescents. And so today we're going to be focusing on how to use trained teen peer educators to actually train adolescent providers in providing this type of communication. So first what I'd like to do is to give an overview of what health education looks like at Children's National. So health education is characterized in an umbrella term called the APEP, the Adolescent Prevention Education Programs. And that includes all of the colorful logos that you see, which is basically programming that's offered to the patients at Children's National, as well as to DC area youth, regardless of if they're patients, through after school programs. And then the other services listed are specifically catered to the patient population that comes into the Adolescent Health Center. So today we're going to be focusing on TASA, Teens Against the Spread of AIDS, and that's a program that started in 1992 as a response to the growing numbers of HIV-infected patients that came through the Adolescent Health Center. And we wanted to design and create a peer education program so that youth could educate their peers on issues around sex, sexuality, and preventing pregnancy and STIs. So we know that teens look to their peers for information around sex, which is why peer education programs are known to work. But according to a national survey, over half of teens actually reported wanting to go to their healthcare provider for information around sexual health. But there's definitely a disconnect between what teens want, they report that they want, and then the actual health-seeking behaviors. And that basically stems from the fact that many of them express discomfort in going into their doctor to ask questions related to sex and sexuality, mainly because they fear that, judgment, but then also they fear that the information will be disclosed to parents and guardians. And so this actually presents a missed opportunity. Research and literature shows that a lot of the primary care settings don't actually take advantage of the opportunity for comprehensive sexual health screenings and counseling sessions as it relates to sex, sexuality, birth control, and the like. And this number is even fewer if you want to just focus on male adolescents. And so, again, it really stems from the youth's discomfort, and of course, and sometimes even the provider's discomfort, and that's something that we're going to kind of touch on in a bit. So, because of that gap between what adolescents want and what they actually receive in that adolescent setting, the Adolescent Healthcare Communication Program was born, which is AHCCP. And this is a national curriculum. It actually started very local in a peer education program. Again, a program called TORCH, Teen Outreach Reproductive Challenge, is based in New York City and is very similar to the work done here in D.C. with TASA. It's a program that has trained high school youth as peer educators, and again, since they actually did some focus groups and they found that there was a gap between, that communication gap, they decided, why don't we use peer educators to bridge the gap? And what they did was they decided to create a curriculum that would do just that. And it was so successful, mainly because it actually is bereft with best practices that are endorsed by the Society of Adolescent Health and Medicine. So it was so successful that the National Institute for Reproductive Health endorsed it, and they put funding behind it to actually implement it across the country. So what was just a homegrown program addressing the current needs that they found that, you know, did mirror some of the national trends in New York City, they decided to kind of expand it to include other cities and states. And this is where the TAFSA program comes in. So since its inception in 2003, the AHCCP program has had 9 different satellites, I'd like to call them, sites that actually replicated this national curriculum. And Children's National was one of the 3 that were selected just last year. And so what I'd like to do now is to show a brief clip of TAFSA in action using actually implementing the AHCCP. And I will say that the clip is not as high resolution as it is online, just because I don't have access to the internet in this room, so I had to kind of download it. So hopefully you're able to hear. Oh, you can't hear. I don't know where the speakers are. Okay, so obviously you can't hear what they're doing right now. So what they're doing is they're starting off with an opening rap, and these are different peer educators giving their piece of advice. Again, there's 2 types of workshops that we do. Some of them are for providers, and in the provider workshop, to train peer educators, they provide teen-centered advice directly to providers. This right here is a poem that the youth developed on teen patients' rights in D.C. So they basically kind of put together, poems that will kind of illustrate the rights that patients have. And, you know, in an attractive way that really will resonate with youth audiences. So the poem is in the youth workshops, and the opening rap is in both the youth workshops as well as the provider workshops. So I do apologize for that. I was told that speakers would be available. So, I definitely can make this available for anyone who's interested. Definitely can give you the website. So I guess I'll just move on forward since you can't hear this. Let's see. Okay. So basically there's 2 features of the AHCCP program. There's what's called the APCW, which is what you got a visual glimpse of, the Adolescent Provider Communication Workshops, and it comes in 2 types. There's the one for patients called Keeping It Real with Your Provider, and that the purpose of that is twofold. On the one hand, you want patients to understand their rights as patients, but then take it one step further and feel comfortable advocating for themselves in the healthcare setting. So really feeling empowered and feeling comfortable with those self-advocacy skills. And then the other is the workshop that we do with providers called Keeping It Real with Your Patients. And that workshop really centers on an opportunity for providers to get that hands-on training with, teen peer educators. And it's an opportunity for them to not only, dispel any myths they have about what teens want and need, but it's an opportunity for them to get that hands-on training when it comes to simulating a patient experience. So that brings me down to the next part of the program, which is the standardized patient, where the youth are actually trained as to be like mock patients, and they actually, have a full character. Are a certain age, race, ethnicity, and they present with a certain issue, and then it's the job of the healthcare provider to kind of uncover and unpack the underlying issue. And so it's an opportunity for them to really kind of practice with communication skills. And so The HEADS model is a clinical interviewing technique or a tool that is used during the clinical interview. And as you can see, it's an acronym that's supposed to be to start off with some of the more basic questions, you know, starting from H and then ending with S, so that, you know, adolescents can come in the room and you immediately start asking them about sex and suicidal thoughts, kind of like those are heavier topics. So you kind of want to warm up to those questions by, you know, kind of filling in, so who do you live with and how's school and what are some of the things that you're involved in the community, things like that. So you kind of use, adolescent providers use this tool as a means to develop a relationship and rapport with their adolescent patient before getting into some of those other issues. And this is just one of many clinical interviewing tools, but this is the one that we focused on in our training. So in the video, some of the youth talked about some of the advice that they would give to an adolescent provider. And so some of those focus on the initial greeting. Again, going back into, you know, I'm in the room and the first thing you ask me is about sex. One of them says, can we start off with some warm-up questions before we jump right into that? So again, using the HEADS interviewing technique, you would do that because it's designed just for that. And then I'm going to kind of focus on some best practices that you can use or that, you know, adolescent healthcare providers can use when it comes to maintaining privacy and confidentiality. So I'll skip those for now and kind of pick up on those in a bit. The non-judgmental attitude is critically important, you know, just because, I mean, you know, we all have our biases, of course, but it's, you know, as providers, it's really helpful to ensure that that attitude doesn't come out in the language and the tone of what you're saying, but even, you know, equally important in the gestures and the body language. So, for instance, one teen says, you know, she remembers her provider's mouth dropped when she asks if she can get sick from swallowing during oral sex. So again, you know, it may be like, oh wow, I was caught off guard with that question. That may be the case, but again, according to national surveys, adolescents want to be able to come to their provider to get these questions answered. And, you know, if they are on the receiving end of what they perceive to be judgmental responses, then they're less likely to actually seek you for the information, one of the youth providers, for the information and, you know, decide to either get it from their peers or online, you know, the other sources. Then, of course, it's clear that understandable language is critically important. And one of the things we talk about is both ways, you know, not just the understandable language on the behalf of the provider, but the youth. You know, if the youth are using, you know, slang that the provider doesn't understand, you can ask them in a respectable way, oh, can you explain to me what that means? So again, so that the communication is both ways. Some of the other things that the youth in the video were kind of discussing was the importance of avoiding assumptions. You know, this assumption here is that they were not sexually active when in fact they were. And other assumptions may be, you know, you have a male patient and you automatically ask, so do you have a girlfriend? You know, assuming that his sexual preference, assuming what his sexual preferences or attractions are. And, you know, the list goes on and on of the types of assumptions when it comes to the educational level, when it comes to their family background, who they live with, and again, so just being aware of those assumptions. So that's why it's important in these provider workshops that there's opportunities to practice that. And then, of course, you know, discussing contraception. Now, this is the complete opposite of the avoiding assumptions. On the one hand, you want to avoid assuming that they're having sex. And then if you go into, you know, start talking about contraception, again, that could be an assumption, at least the way it's perceived by a youth who said it's like they assume I'm having sex because they brought it up. So one of the techniques that we discussed and practiced in the workshops was around kind of question, framing it in a way where you give the the authority to the youth. So you're asking, oh, okay, so you, I want to make sure that it's clear the differences between safe and unsafe sex. So do you mind now to kind of go into some of the different birth control methods? We can kind of talk about them, but you feel comfortable with that. Again, it's all about the framing of it and necessarily kind of just jumping right into it. Again, because this is the perception that a youth who may already be nervous and afraid, you know, the fact that they're at the doctor's office, you know, it can be perceived in that way. And then again, you know, going into unsafe sex, sexuality, and then all of this really does lead into cultural competency. So one of the things that was critically important was maintaining that confidentiality. And, you know, adolescents actually see probably three or four people before they even get to the actual doctor. And so sometimes some of the misinformation around the confidentiality laws in that particular state can happen before they get there, which is why it's really important that the full team is aware and, you know, has a, presents a united front on maintaining the confidentiality laws for the state. And this is what we do. When we have workshops with adolescent patients, we make sure that they definitely know their rights. When it comes to the age that you can consent to sex, and again, this is very specific to Washington, D.C., but the age in which you can consent to sex or obtain a prescription for birth control or terminate a pregnancy, again, all of that needs to be clearly outlined for youth so that they could, you know, they can advocate for themselves and make informed decisions. And so those Keeping It Real with Your Provider workshops really provided an opportunity for us to ensure that youth knew all of these rights around where they can receive treatment. And, you know, even if, you know, it is confidential service and it is private conversations with your provider, knowing that, oh, but by the way, that bill's going to go to who pays for this visit. So technically, even if this is confidential and private, again, the bill is going to go home to whoever pays it. So if that's your caregiver or provider or parent, then technically that could be an issue. So that's why we bring up the importance of going to Title X clinics where even billing is discreet. So going to some of the best practices around confidentiality and privacy that we kind of use for our workshops was really explaining the terms of confidentiality. So one, what is confidentiality and in what instances must I breach confidentiality? If you're harmed to yourself or to others, and really explaining that to the adolescent, not making any assumptions that they understand confidentiality. And then one of the things that we did was we actually created a confidentiality contract. It was like a certificate that we gave all the providers, and it was, you know, nice and official looking, had the children's logo on it, and it's something they can sign and provide to their patients as they talk to them about confidentiality, and everything's clearly outlined and written. So that's one way to ensure that you definitely have that conversation, and then, you know, kind of just have it documented. And then kind of normalize the private time. Again, it could be very awkward to have that conversation with someone's caregiver, like, excuse me, do you mind kind of waiting in the waiting room while I talk to your son or daughter? But it's really helpful because, again, adolescents, that's one of the number one reasons that they either don't ask the questions all of the questions that they have, or they're not honest with the answers, is because their parent or their grandmother is sitting right here. So I'm clearly not going to answer that, you know, as candidly as I would if it was just me and you in the room. So one of the things that we talked about in the workshops was how to discreetly and respectfully, you know, kind of facilitate that process of having some private time one-on-one with the adolescent. And one of the things that we did was, again, to normalize it. So it's kind of like, it's not just, you know, this is something that we do. They're a growing adolescent, and they're at a stage where, you know, we want some private time, and we'll invite you back in the end, and that gets into the debriefing, to kind of, you know, for some of that wrap-up conversation. And, again, talking with the adolescent about the conditions of what's going to be shared. So, again, that confidentiality is maintained. So we actually were very successful in the materials that we were able to develop. Again, we received this national curriculum. It was already prepackaged, and, you know, it was like, okay, here's the curriculum, go forth and implement. But obviously with any curriculum, you have to tweak it, make it your own. So we added the TAFSA flair, and that's where you see the opening rap and the poems and things like that. That's not in the national curriculum. That's something that we just did locally because that's the type of peer education that we do. So that was just kind of done. And so basically we created the these brochures that were gender specific, and they're youth friendly, and they really outline everything that you can expect in a visit. So like, for instance, you pick up the female brochure, it would outline everything that you can expect in your visit with your provider today. They're going to do this, and they might touch that, they'll ask you this, these are some questions you can ask. So that's really, really helpful to know what to expect. We also gave them the laminated cards that really explains their rights as teen patients, and we put it in the little handy dandy pouch that they can wear on a lanyard and kind of know what their rights are if they don't, you know, have them all down and memorized. And we were able to reach over 100 youth in 6 different workshops just last year, as well as over 50 providers in 2 workshops. And again, integrating it into, because, you know, that was initially we were thinking that it would be a challenge to kind of get providers, like when are they going to have time? But integrating it into the actual noon conference and when the residents and things like that meet at the hospital has been really successful for us. So if you have any questions, please do, you know, I guess I'll entertain them at the end of the panel, but I did bring some brochures on the Adolescent Healthcare Communication Program. They're at the back table. The program, again, is a national program, and they're interested in being replicated. Again, they have 9 national sites now, and they want more. So if you're interested, definitely pick up a brochure. And if you want information more about the program specifically at Children's and ways to collaborate with them, I would encourage you to contact Dr. D'Angelo. Thank you.